Genesis chapter 10. We're going to be looking at chapter 10 and 11 tonight, not doing too much in chapter 10, just looking at a few of the highlights there, but Genesis chapter 10. If we see Genesis chapter 10, Genesis chapter 10 is actually an overview of the population growth after the flood. All right, it's the overview of the population growth after the flood. Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 to 9 are described, they describe the details of the changing events that took place during that population explosion, particularly in the days of Peleg. Peleg was one of the men found in the middle of Genesis chapter 25. And let's take a look at that in verse number 25 of Genesis 10. I think I said chapter 25, but Genesis 10, verse 25. And unto Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, and in his days was the earth divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. All right, now, Peleg lived about 100 years after the flood. Now, that's important for us to understand. You know, sometimes I look at that and I think, could it really just be that short a time? It seems like it must have been longer, but when you look at the genealogies and the way that they are laid out, it works out probably about 100 years. And people multiplied very rapidly after the flood. And these families multiplied. And so God had told them to multiply. They multiplied rapidly. It's about 100 years after the flood. And his name, Peleg's name, means divided. Divided. And God tells us that it was that the earth was divided in his days. And it's very likely that this is when God divided the world by languages. All right. There are some people that think that, you know, possibly it's when the continents separated. There's some real problems with that idea. This Pangaea theory that all the continents were all hooked together at one point and spread out. There's some possible truth to that, but if it did happen, it took place during the flood because it would have, can you imagine? You know, you think about how much of a tidal wave is caused by a big earthquake. I mean, you can have massive tidal waves for one big earthquake. Can you imagine if the continents moved? And they moved kilometers apart? I mean, the tidal waves would be so massive that there wouldn't be a single person alive on the world. It would wipe out the world again. So that's not very logical and not very possible, but it could have happened during the flood. But the dividing of the earth during Peleg's days was probably referring to the languages. And we're going to dig into that as we look at this important passage here tonight. And I want us to answer two questions about the Tower of Babel and the things around that that can have direction in our lives. Two questions here that can be helpful to us. Number one question is this. Why were the men building the city and the tower? Now, that's a pretty good question. Why were they doing that? All right? And God tells us that in chapter 11. So as we begin chapter 11, verse number 1, it says, and the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. Now God starts this out stating that. If he would have said that anywhere else in the Bible, that would have sounded like, well, what's that got to do with anything? But in this chapter, it had everything to do with it because that was the key to what was taking place. Everyone spoke the same language. Everyone. The whole world did. Now, he goes on in verse 2, and it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar and dwelt there. All right, so it says here that God is telling them, he had told them to journey away. He told, remember, God told them to spread up, fill up the world. He told Noah and his family that back in chapter 8, as they got off the ark, and God told them to go and fill up the earth again and multiply and spread and fill up the earth. And so God had urged them to do that, and now they've begun to journey. And it says there that they journeyed from the east. Now, you scratch your head and think, journeying from the east? If you know your geography, that doesn't add up. All right? Because if you take your geography and have a look at geography, I'll just do a quick one here. You got the Mediterranean Sea here. Israel's along here. Mount Ararat was probably up here in Turkey. All right? And then the Mediterranean Valley was over here, and Babel is over in here. Well, that's going east. That's not coming to the east. There's two explanations. All right? Some people believe that they left the mountains here and wandered over here into these areas over here and got over here and found out there wasn't anything there but a bunch of mountains and water, and so there's no sense in staying there, and then they traveled east and went over here. That's one possibility. Another possibility is in the, if you take a look at the footnotes, and some of you would have this in your app or something like that, if you look at the 1611 footnotes of the King James 1611, even the King James translators, they put it right in the footnotes and they said, or eastward. And I think that probably answers a lot of the question. The wording there evidently can refer, they traveled from the east or eastward. And eastward would be the answer to say that they traveled eastward. So that's a good enough answer to me. They probably traveled eastward. And when they were traveling, they came to the flat land in Mesopotamia. And in the area that was called Shinar or Babylon or Chaldea. All the same place in the flat land here in the midst between these two rivers, the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. And it was a beautiful flat land, and they traveled and they got there. And when they found that area, it was an area that they liked. It was a beautiful area. It was fertile. The land was flat and fertile, and it grew things well, and they enjoyed, they liked that area. And so they thought, this is where we're going to settle down. And so they decided because of their own pleasure, they liked it, they decided this is where we're going to settle, and they stayed there and began to build. And they began to build both a city and a tower. We see that in verse number 3. And they said one to another, let us go and let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and slime for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. All right, now, several things we notice here. So first of all, the first reason that they were building was probably because it was a nice place. They enjoyed it. It was a pleasant place. It was a place of pleasure, a place they enjoyed. Nothing really wrong with that. I mean, we would, you know, if you were looking for a place to build a house, we were back in the olden days, and you were just traveling along, and you're looking for a nice place to settle down, well, you wouldn't pick the rocky old ridges that were useless, and you couldn't grow any veggies on it or anything like that. You find a nice plain, you say, wow, look at this. There's water nearby, and there's a nice, beautiful plain, and there's a good place to grow plants and veggies, and this is a perfect place. Let's build right here. And so there's nothing really wrong with that. That's a wise choice. But, you know, sometimes prosperity and pleasure and things of that nature are not always a sign of God's blessing. Sometimes Satan will use prosperity to get us to think of our self-sufficiency. I don't need anything else. I got everything I need now. Who needs God now? We've got it all. Look at this. We got a beautiful place here. This is great. We're going to settle down. And they may have had a wrong perspective there. Now, we see a second reason that they built was a reason of pride. Down in verse number 4, it says, go to, let us build us a city and whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name. Let us make us a name. We're going to be well known. We're going to build this big city and this big tower, and everybody's going to know us as the people of Shinar, the people of this area here of Babel or Babylon, and we're going to make a name for ourselves, and this is going to be a great place, and this is going to be something that people all over the whole world will remember us for. And they were looking to build something that everyone would know about. And the top, they said, would reach to heaven. Building a high tower that would reach to heaven. It's very likely that this tower that they were building was called a ziggurat. And there's a lot of those that they found over there and the remains of digging and things of that nature. And they're shaped like a pyramid, except that they have tiers in them. And you can walk up the sides of it, and these ziggurats were made so that the people could climb up these things, and they eventually climb up until they get to the top. And on the top, they had a place of worship and altar and various things of that, and worshiping false gods and of that nature. That's what those ziggurats were mainly made for. And it's very likely that that's the type of thing that they were constructing here. There's been lots of different theories on those kind of things, but that seems to probably be the answer of it. Warren Wiersbe tells us this in his commentary. He says, archaeologists have excavated several of these large structures which were built primarily for religious purposes. A ziggurat was like a pyramid, except that the successive levels were recessed so that you could walk to the top on steps. At the top was a special shrine dedicated to gods or a god or a goddess. All right, that's from the Bible Exposition Commentary. Now, a man named Nimrod was the leader of this this excavation and building of things like that. We see him, we're introduced back in verse number 9 of chapter 10. And actually in verse 8, it says, "And Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. And he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore, it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord." Now, nobody really knows for sure what that means. He was a mighty hunter. The term, actually, you look up the term, and it describes one who hunts creatures. It wasn't like he was a warrior fighting other people, necessarily. It was primarily referring to fighting wild beasts and of things of that nature, or maybe even just a mighty hunter that was getting lots of game for the people to eat. That's a possibility as well. Some have suggested that people like Nimrod were out trying to fight the dragons and fight the dinosaurs and stuff that were invading them and taking over and eating in their gardens and things like that. Whatever it was, we know that Nimrod was one who stood out above others. He was a mighty man. He was a strong man. He was a leader. He was a strong leader and a mighty fighter. And so he was the one that seems to be the leader of this, because as we read on in verse number 10, and it says, "In the beginning of his kingdom was Babel." Alright? So he was over there. He was the one that started Babel and all these other places that were nearby. And so he was a leader. He built these cities. He built these, and he seems to be the one that is promoting this pride-filled tower that they're building and this big city that they're building around Babel. Now, pride turned men's hearts away from God. It always does. You know, when we start feeling like I'm good enough, I don't need God, you know, that's one of the big problems we have in our world today. You try to talk to people, and even if they kind of had a little kind of an inclination about that there might be a God out there, "I don't need God. I'm doing fine. Look at everything I got." We live in a prosperous society. We've got money. We've got cars. We've got boats. We've got this. We've got that. We don't need God. And people have that feeling that prosperity makes them independent of God. And so it was in those days as well. Pride is the thinking too highly of ourselves. It's putting ourselves first. It's thinking that we are superior to superior to others. And it's not a good thing. And it always hinders us. You know, as we think about pride, we need to ask ourselves, this is not a pleasant question to ask ourselves, but we need to ask ourselves, does that describe me? Do I struggle with pride? And you know, the truth is, probably we all do more than we want to admit. Pride is one of those things that is difficult to identify in ourselves. Others can see it more quickly than we can see it in ourselves. And not only is it difficult to observe, but it's also difficult to conquer. And yet it is a sin that hinders our walk with God. And it hurts us spiritually. Pride is an evil, destructive sin. And God says about pride in Proverbs chapter 16, verse 5. He says, "Everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hand joined in hand, he shall not be unpunished." You can't get much stronger words than that. God said, if we're proud in heart, we're an abomination to Him. He absolutely hates that. It makes you sick. God hates pride. Now, why was it? Think with me a little bit. Why would pride be one of the things that God so detests? I mean, probably the number one thing as you look through the Bible, if you were to pick out the number one sin that God hates probably above all others, is idolatry. But next to idolatry is probably pride. Why? Well, I think it's because when we get proud, we're actually, in a sense, competing with God. God made us, and yet we turn around and say, look at me, aren't I great? And we don't give God the glory for it. And we like act like I made myself great. And God did it all. And so we rob from God. Pride is stealing the glory that God deserves. Proverbs 16:18 says, pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. And if we are proud and we struggle with pride, God said it's going to lead to destruction in our life. It's going to cause us to fall. We're going to mess up and we're going to make a mess of things because we have pride in our hearts. And so the people of Babel had forgotten God, that he hated sin. Now, it had only been about 100 years. Now, you think back 100 years ago from where we are right now. All right, we're in 2021. You go back to 1921, a long time ago. None of us were around then. But things were a lot different back then. And, you know, we don't think too much of all the stuff that happened back in 1921. And so it was in those days. They think, like, oh, the ark and the flood, that was a long time ago. That was 100 years ago. But, you know, Noah was still alive. And several of his children were still alive during this time. They weren't ignorant of what happened during the flood. And actually, I was going to look that up, but I'm certain that Noah was still alive. He lived several hundred years after the flood. But if I was wrong there, correct me. But the idea here is that the people were there. They had no excuse. They knew what had happened. Everybody knew what had happened. Everybody knew the flood had taken place. Everybody knew that God had destroyed the world. Everybody knew. That was not hidden secret to anybody. They all knew that, and yet they had gotten satisfied. And they begin to forget. And they forget God, and they get pride in their hearts. And, you know, we really need a right view of God and his greatness in order to have a right view of ourselves. If we see God as who he is, as the great and the mighty and powerful God that he really is, it'll help us to see ourselves as the helpless, weak, frail person that we really are. We've got to see God as the great God that he is. And so we need to ask God to help us to see him in a right way. And God, you know, if you were to choose one characteristic that you could have that God is pleased with, over and over again, God is pleased with humility. God is pleased with humility. For the same reason he hates pride. Because humility says, God, I am nothing. You are everything. It's all you. It's not about me. And pride says, God, I don't need you. It's all about me. So they're just the opposites. We read in James chapter 4 and verse 10, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord and he shall lift you up. You want to be lifted up by God? God said, humble yourself and I'll lift you up. It's something that's difficult to obtain. It's to just say, I'm going to be humble. And, you know, say, someone asks, are you humble or are you proud? Well, I'm humble. Well, as soon as we start thinking I'm humble, we're proud that I'm humble. You know, and so it's a struggle. It's a difficulty. And so it is one of those sins that is not easy to conquer. But I think one of the best things that can help me and can help you is to get a greater view of God. See God for who he is. And it automatically puts me down to where I really need to be. Because God is great. So the second reason they built that city and tower was because of pride. The third reason was rebellion. They were rebellious toward God. Did you notice there in verse number 4 once again of chapter 11? And they said, go to, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach into heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Now, what did God tell them to do? God told them to multiply and spread out and fill the earth. And they said, we don't want to do that. We're going to stick together. We're not going to get spread out all over the whole earth. We're going to stick together in this thing. And if we build this a big tower and a big city, we can have all these people around. We can be the capital of this area, and this would be a great, we can just, this whole area is going to be ours, and we're going to have a great kingdom here, and we can really make this work. And they were looking at themselves. And God said, I want you to spread. And they said, no way, we don't want to scatter. And so they purposely rebelled against God. It's interesting. If you look up Nimrod's name, do you know what his name means? It means rebellion. Rebellion. So Nimrod here was this rebellious leader that was instigating the building of the city and the tower, and they were fighting against God and working against God. God told them to fill the earth back in chapter 9, verse 1. God said, and God blessed Noah and his sons and said unto them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And they said, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to stick together. And they rebelliously worked against God's command. And they deliberately chose not to scatter when God said, I want you to scatter. I want you to scatter. And evidently, many of Noah's descendants lived there together in the plains of Shinar. Now, some people speculate that perhaps Shem and his family, remember he had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth? And Shem's family were the ones that ended up being the more godly line. And some suspect that maybe Shem and Noah and the godly people had said, no, we're not going to go there. We're not going to be part of that. We're not going to have anything to do with that. That is very possible. It could be that Japheth seems to be the one that was probably the leader of that, whereas Ham and his family, many of them went down to Africa in that time, but Japheth and his family were up in that area. So that is a possibility. But a lot of these people were working together here, and they were disobeying God and building the city in rebellion and disobeying what God had told them to do. Now, rebellion is a natural outgrowth of independence and pride. It's a natural outgrowth of independence and pride. I don't need God. I'm all right myself. I can do it myself. And I'm not going to do what they said to do. Rebellion. Right? It is feeling that God's way is bitter and my way is better. You know, there's nothing evil about the land of Shinar, but they had sinned in choosing to remain there instead of obeying God to fill the earth. God said, spread out. And there were some very good reasons for that, and we're going to look at that in just a few moments. When they rebelled against the Lord, they turned against God and what God wanted them to do. And we do the same when we rebel against God. Back in the book of Samuel, Samuel wrote in chapter 12 and verse number 15, he says, but if ye will not obey the voice of the Lord, but rebel against the commandment of the Lord, then shall the hand of the Lord be against you, and it was against, as it was against your fathers. God said, if we rebel against God, God's hand is going to be against us. I mean, life is tough as it is. Can you imagine just having God actually work against you? I mean, we don't want that. Not a one of us here tonight would say, I don't care if God works against me. Oh, yes, we would. We don't want God to work against us. We want God to be for us. We want to do what God would be pleased so that God can bless us instead of having God work against us. But God said if we're proud and we rebel against Him, He will actually work against us. And that's not what we need. So we've answered one question here. Why did they build the city and the tower? They built it out of pleasure, which was not necessarily bad. They built it out of pride, and they built it out of rebellion. The last two obviously were wrong. But then I want us to answer another question. How did God respond to man's prideful rebellion? Now, this is pretty amazing. You know, if you were going to conquer a situation like this, and all these thousands of people were rebelling against you, and they wouldn't listen to you, and they wouldn't do what you told them to do, we'd say, how in the world are we going to stop that? There's nothing that anybody could do. I mean, if God would have said, Noah, go down there and tell those people to behave, they would have laughed at him and said, go away, old man Noah. We don't want to know about it. Leave us alone. We're not going to obey you. People couldn't stop him. It was beyond human ability, but God did it in a moment. with a flash. God knew exactly how to deal with it. It says in the scripture, verse 5 of chapter 11, and the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. Now, could God not see it in heaven? Yeah, he could. But the idea here is that God came down, he's going to deal with this. God says, I'm going to go down there, I'm going to take care of this. And they're going to know that it's me that did it. And God went down there to see what was taking place and to deal with the situation. In verse number 6, and the Lord said, behold, the people is one. And they all have one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. God knows the hearts of people. And he said, they have put it in their minds that they're going to rebel against me. They're going to do what they want to do. They're going to build this big city. They're going to make this name for themselves. They're going to stay together. They're going to refuse to fill the earth like I told them. And this can't do. We're going to have to deal with this. And God went down there to deal with that. Now, not only did God see this tower and the city, but God looked beyond that. What did he see? God saw their hearts. God saw their hearts. And you know, that's one of the things that even with children, you know, you children, when you get in trouble and dad comes and says, hey, I caught you. Dad can see the outside, but one thing dad can't see is your heart. But God can. God can. God knows exactly why we do what we do. Every time we do wrong, God knows all of it. And that's an important thing for us to remember. God sees it all, and he knows their hearts. And he went down there, and he saw the hearts of those people. He saw what was happening. All that they imagined to do, God said, I see that. I see what they're up to and what they're going to do. That reminds us of what caused the flood way back earlier in Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5. And God saw the wickedness of man, that it was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. That's what God caused the flood to begin with, because God saw their hearts was evil continually. The imaginations of the heart. Now he says, I could see their imaginations. They've gone wrong again. They're headed the wrong direction again. I've got to stop this. And God wasn't going to send another flood. He says, I want them to spread out like I told them to. And he saw their independence. He saw their pride. He saw their rebellion. And God knew that there was nothing humanly possible that could be done to stop them. God not only sees everything we do, but he also knows the secrets of our heart. We can't hide anything from God. Remember the Psalm 139? We sing that chorus that's based on Psalm 139. The first four verses of that psalm says, O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest my downsetting and my uprising, and understandest my thought afar off. Thou compassest my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. There is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. God knows all about me. God sees all I do. I can't hide from God, and neither can you. God knows us. And he saw them, and he saw what they were up to. But then God, in his wise wisdom, in just a moment's of time, he solved the problem. Verse number 7. God says, go to, let us go down, and confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. The word confound there means to mix. And God mixed their language, changed their languages, so that they couldn't understand each other. And now all of a sudden they're working along, and they turn to each other and talk to them, and they say, they couldn't understand a thing. Can you imagine if all of a sudden, you know, every one of us started talking some other language? And we'd all just say, oh, I don't get it. I'm out of here. You guys are crazy. And it confused them all. And God solved the problem. He mixed their languages. People can't work together and live together if they don't understand each other. We've got to be able to talk. We've got to be able to communicate. And authorities claim that today there are somewhere around 6,900 different distinct languages in the world. 6,900 languages. God did a good job of mixing things up. God did a mighty good job. You know, if there were all these people there, I don't know how many people were there, several thousand, and God just changes all their languages suddenly, and so they all start speaking different languages, And they just wander around until they found somebody else. Oh, finally, somebody I can understand. And they'd say, stick with me. Don't leave me now. I don't want to lose you now. And then they just migrated off their own ways so they could have peace. And God got them to do what he wanted them to do, to spread out as he told them to do. You know, the new languages scattered the people upon the face of the earth like God intended. Look at verse number 8. And so the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth, and they left off to build the city. They scattered. They did what God wanted them to do. Now, some of what I'm about to say, some of you have heard, and it'll be a review for you. Others maybe have not considered this. Why was it important for them to spread quickly around the world like God told them to do? Why? One of the major reasons was because at that point, it was only 100 years after the flood, and the water levels of the oceans were much, much lower. And probably because of the, during the catastrophic upheavals of the earth during the flood, and the tremendous heat that came out of the ground during the upheavals would have heated the ocean waters to very warm, if not hot, at the start. And the waters evaporate much faster when they're hot or warm. And the waters of the oceans were rapidly evaporating, and when they got into the atmosphere and cooled, they came down in the northern hemisphere, in the southern hemisphere, with tremendous snow dumps. And the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere were completely covered with massive, massive layers of snow, which quickly turned to ice, and began what we know of and scientists call the Ice Age. The Ice Age really did happen. But it was within those first few hundred years, right after the flood, when the ice on the northern caps and the southern cap of the world were frozen thick. And it came way down over half of the United States, all over Canada, down through half of America, and around the world that same way. And in the southern hemisphere, you don't see it as much because Antarctica, you know, nothing around there but water. But there's lots and lots of ice, and the glaciers and the things that took place at that time as these things began to melt. Now, as these snow cap and ice caps began to melt and the oceans cooled and they began to fill up, there was only a certain amount of time before those oceans reached the levels that they are today, where they don't get any higher, don't get any lower, pretty much the same. And Christian scientists believe that there was probably about 700 years after the flood before that happened. So the people had only a brief span of 600 or 700 years to get spread out all over the world before all the land bridges were buried. You got land bridges from, you know, if we lowered the ocean by 100 or 200 feet, you could walk all the way across into Indonesia, up in New Guinea, and, you know, all over the world. You could walk virtually everywhere. Not out in the deep oceans, I understand that, but there'd be land bridges all over that would connect all the continents. And so as that water began to rise, they had to be gone in those areas before that happened. And so God had a purpose in sending them quickly, and God spread them around because of with the languages to be able to do that. So I find that very fascinating. So tonight as we look at this, what can we learn from this? Well, one of the biggest things we can learn is that God hates pride, and God hates rebellion. And those are two things that we struggle with, pride and rebellion. That's part of our sinful nature, to be proud and to be rebellious. None of you children took lessons on how to be proud or rebellious, but I'm sure you learned it pretty easily yourself. All of us do. And that's a struggle that we have. And so God wants us to work at conquering that. We need God's help, because these sins will rob us of God's blessing and cause God to work against us, and we don't want that. And so we need to ask God, God, help me not to be proud. And help me not to be rebellious. And strive to get a bigger view of who God is. And how great God is. And how wonderful God is. And how powerful He is over us. Have a right view of God. And then, if we're not obeying something that God wants us to do, God told Him to spread out through the world. You know, there's lots of things that God has told us to do. Told us to be a witness for Him. Told us to be testimony, to live godly lives. God may be speaking to one of your hearts to actually serve Him in a particular way. Maybe God will call you to the mission field or call you to be a preacher or a preacher's wife or whatever the case may be. But God is speaking to your soul and there's something God has for you. And you say, well, I don't want to do that. Well, the best thing we can do is to submit to God and say, God, I'll do it if you want me to do whatever you want me to do. I'll follow your leading. Because remember these people, they said, we don't want to spread out. We want to stay together. And God said, no, I want you to spread. And God has given us specific instructions as well of what he wants us to do today, to serve him and honor him and spread the gospel. And if we say, no, God, I don't want to do that, we're going to work against God and that's going to work against us. So whatever it may be, the Lord may be working in your heart about, let God have his way and God will bless you if you obey him. There may be some of you children that don't know Jesus as your Savior yet. You can rebel against that and say, oh, I'm not ready yet. Well, when God speaks to your heart and prepares you, you need to say, yes, Lord, I'll obey. I'll trust you as my Savior. And that's the best thing you can possibly do. Don't rebel against God. Let God have his way. And God will bless you if you'll do that. So remember the Babel. Remember the Tower of Babel and the change of the languages. What caused it? What God did to fix it? And what it has to do with us and how it can apply to our lives.